Hello, this is Richard Davis, welcoming you to At Home This Morning, a magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not-so-old. Coming up in the next hour, we'll be getting an update on the appeal to restore three of the Madeira Drive arches. Chris English will be previewing some Christmas shows, and we'll be hearing about a fund that's been started by a local lady in memory of her late son, which is designed to raise money to put defibrillators into various critical locations, such as at football clubs. As usual, we'll be giving out email addresses, website addresses and phone numbers during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. So, let's get started by hearing about the Madeira Terraces campaign. Back in October, Chris English spoke to Jack Atkins, who was organising a raffle to raise money for a fund to restore three of the Madeira Drive arches. Well, the draw for the raffle recently took place, so Chris thought he'd go back and find out how it had gone. Before we hear that, however, let's remind ourselves of what was happening back in October. One day in that month, Chris went down to the Madeira Drive arches to talk to Jack Atkins about the fundraising campaign, and he began by asking her how much money would need to be raised in order to restore the arches.
24 million is a rough guide to get them all completely back to their original beauty.
I mean, that's an awful lot of money. So
well,
where's
a lot
that going to come from?
It's going to come, hopefully, from heritage loans, grants, lottery, blah, blah, blah. But what we're doing at the moment is there's an initial crowdfunding plan, which is going to raise $429,000 to restore three of the arches, put three pop-up businesses in them, see how it works for a short while, apply for funding. Because you know, when you apply for funding, they want to see that you've got a business proposition these days. They also want to see that that the community is involved, which this is an example of. And the raffle I'm running off is another fine example of that.
Tell us a bit about the raffle.
Oh, yeah. Well, three of us local residents decided that the crowdfunding wasn't getting enough publicity. People didn't know about it. So we started a raffle asking local businesses and local residents to donate prizes. And we've got like, over 400 now. It's marvellous.
What sort of prizes?
Well, we've got an airplane flight from Shoreham all along the front. We've got two nights at the Old Ship Hotel. We've got meals in pubs, meals in restaurants, Englishes, Riddle and Finn. One lady in America has given her house, bed and breakfast in North Carolina for a week. And she's also begging airlines, American airlines to begin with, to give flights for two people.
So worthwhile. But there's another way of donating money.
Yes, by pledging your money, yes, to the crowdfunding site, savetheterraces.com. Yes, you can pledge from £2 upwards. Pledge, not give, pledge. And so if crowdfunding is reached, then they will take your £2, say. If it isn't reached, there's no money.
Well, that was back in late October. The draw for the raffle took place at the Cricketers Pub on the 24th of November. So Chris thought he'd go and see Jack's again to find out how it had gone. When he met up with her, he reminded her that on their previous occasion, she'd been desperate to raise money.
Very desperate, yes, and I wasn't sure whether we're going to. Now we have,
well, you
yes.
Have, you have.
Yes.
And that little raffle you ran amazed how much money?
£16,771.41.
Did you ever think you'd get that amount of money?
No. No, no, I had plans for 10,000, and then I thought, I'll get 20,000 tickets initially, because it was cheap to get double the amount. But no, I didn't think so I'm really, really pleased that we got that much.
And how did the event go with the raffle when you drew it?
Oh, that was great, very hectic, loads of people turned out. It was at the Cricketers, Dave Day's pub, the Lion Man, and it was very busy. They laid on food and stuff, and it was very, very hectic.
And work is starting next year.
Yes, next August, or maybe earlier, maybe July, August, maybe even earlier. But it's all loopholes and red tape and council business, so I'm very optimistic. I'd like it to start earlier. I'd like it to start in the warm months, like in May. We'll see.
What about the idea of having cafes and flats and that sort of thing.
I don't like the idea of flats, and I would oppose flats 100%, but I like the idea of cafes, little businesses, little local businesses, not corporate stuff. Not, you know, Costa Coffee, Amazon and things like that, but little cafes, local businesses, crafts, clothes shops, sporting things. Actually, this is going to be a sporting area more, running, swimming of the town. So that's what I would like to see. And I think some of the arches would be great and some where you could walk and sit. I think a mixture of both would work well. Because everything has to be business-related these days. That's a fact of life.
I'm afraid it is. Yeah. And so you've done it.
Yes.
How self-satisfying is that for you?
I don't want to sound big-headed. It's very self-satisfying. Mostly it's satisfying because we've just gained such a marvellous community. I've met wonderful people, generous, open-hearted people. We've got a big community here again, which we didn't have before, which was gone. It was missing. It had vanished. Everyone was thinking about completely different things, you know, themselves, what was happening with their lives. But now people have kind of gone outside the... Oh, what do you call it? The bubble. And they've decided that, you know, where they live's important. And they've really, really got involved in it. And I love it. I've met so many really great people. It's great.
To get a point of view from Brighton and Hove City Council, Chris then went to see Councillor Warren Morgan, who's the leader of the council and has been very much involved in the Save the Arches campaign.
Warren Morgan, leader Brighton Hove Council, and Save the Arches. You got there.
We have. It's fantastic. It's great news. And I'm immensely grateful to all the people that have pledged, supported the campaign, bought raffle tickets, donated. It's been a great community and city effort.
What happens now?
Well, yesterday we've already taken the first step towards making the next move in the campaign, bidding for the Heritage Lottery Fund money that we'd always planned to bid for, which will be £4 or £5 million, then getting the project underway and hopefully starting on site in August of next year.
Right, as quickly as that?
Absolutely. We've been geared up, ready to go as soon as we were able to hit this target. Hopefully get the lottery fund bid agreed by the spring. Then we'll be underway as soon as we possibly can.
Now, is that for the restoration of the initial three arches, which is what the appeal was all about?
That's right. And so what we're doing is doing three arches to begin with, to show what we can do with the structure as a whole. Now, obviously, we want to ensure that any money that's invested in the arches can be paid back and that the money from any activity under it can go towards the long-term upkeep of the arches. So we're looking at hosting, as we've done in arches elsewhere on the seafront, small cafes, small artist studios, little shops, those kind of things.
So what chances of the whole arches? Because there's much more than three, aren't there?
Absolutely. I think there's about 80 or 90 of them. That will take a considerably larger amount of money. We think up to £24 million in order to sort of equip them all and restore them all, particularly if the ironwork is, as we believe, fully corroded. So, it's going to be a big project. We will be looking for private investment and potentially Public Works Loan Board borrowing. So there'll be a long way to go, and we'll have to do it step by step, but we've taken the first step.
And you think you'll get there eventually to get the whole lot restored?
I think having seen how the Madeira terraces are valued, not just by residents in the community, but by business and organisations, yes, I think the will is there. So it would be a very courageous politician who'd give up on this now.
You're starting work next year. If you had to look in a crystal ball and see how long it was before the whole lot was restored, what would that show you?
Well, it's part of our vision for the whole of Madeira Drive. So we've already got the zip wire up and running. We've got the sea lane swimming facility coming. There's some great stuff down there that's been there for quite a while. The Yellow Wave volleyball court, Grace's Place, Peter Pan's playground, all of those things. But the jewel in the crown will be our new arena, which we hope to build at the far end near to Brighton Marina, which will replace the Brighton Centre, provide a conference and concert venue that's fit for the 21st century. And the Madeira terraces feature very much within that overall vision. So the project, the waterfront project that will build the new arena is likely to take a decade. So it will be within that time frame, but hopefully sooner than that.
Warren, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chris English has been talking to Jack Zatkins and to Councillor Warren Morgan about the success of their recent fundraising scheme to restore three of the Madeira arches down on the seafront. Back to Chris English to introduce the next part of the programme.
Well, in case you hadn't noticed, it's Christmas time in Brighton and Hove, and of course everywhere else. Let's look at one or two of the shows that are on. Of course, start with pantomimes, and the first one on the list is Cinderella at the Brighton Metropole Hotel, would you believe? We're told that it includes live dodgem cars, and it's the 10th year since Cinderella has appeared in Brighton, and there's also a Christmas fair and market, and you can see Santa. That's on at the Brighton Metropole Hilton Hotel from the 22nd to the 27th of December, with shows at 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock in the evening. Next, we have Pinocchio, and that will appear at what was known as the Gardeners Arts Theatre at Sussex University. It's now called the Attenborough Centre, and in memory, of course, of the much-loved Dickie Attenborough, who was Vice-Chancellor and had a huge amount of work involved in the university in the early days. Pinocchio is on at the Attenborough Centre, Sussex University, from the 20th of December until the 6th of January. Shows are at 2 o'clock and at 7 o'clock in the evening. Next, we turn to the Old Market in Hove, which is just off Western Road. Cinderella and the Beanstalk. Now, I always thought they were two separate pantomimes, Cinderella and Jack and the Beanstalk. But apparently, no, this one is called Cinderella and the Beanstalk. It's on from the 14th of December to the 6th of January. And on some days, there is a matinee at 2:30, but most of the performances are at 7:30 in the evening. Next, we have one of several versions of Snow White in Brighton and in the area. This one is at the Windmill Theatre, which is, of course, part of Blatchington Mill School in Hove. You can access it from just by the windmill in Blatchington, and that's on from the 20th to the 27th of December, with performances at 7:30. And I think there are also some matinees later on in the run. Next, slightly out of Brighton Hove, the Rope Tackle Theatre, which is in Shoreham, in the High Street in Shoreham, and they have Dick Whittington from the 13th to the 31st of December. Again, it takes place at various times, including 11 o'clock in the morning, 2:30 in the afternoon, and 6 o'clock in the evening. Also out of the centre of Brighton is Beauty and the Beast at the Meridian Centre in Peacehaven. That's a local amateur production. It takes place from the 6th to the 9th of December, with performances at 7:30 on the 6th, 7th and 8th, and at 2 o'clock and 6 o'clock on the 9th. In case you're wondering, I haven't actually mentioned the Theatre Royal in Brighton. They haven't had a pantomime there for some years, and this year is no exception. It'll be a performance of Grease, which will star some TV personalities, as some of these professional pantomimes seem that they have to do these days. And that's on from the 11th to the 31st of December, and again, various times. Now, all of those shows you can find by going to various websites and finding out what's on. Moving on to sort of general events rather than pantomimes and theatres. Of course, one of our favourites is Burning the Clocks, with a procession from New Road to the beach. Well worth it. A look. If the weather is not blowing a gale, as it was, I think, last year, or maybe it was the year before. So, gales permitting, it'll be on the 21st of December. Going further west again to the Rope Tackle Theatre on New Year's Eve, they have the Treason Show. Don't know much about that, but the Treason Show, it is at the Rope Tackle in Shoreham, to the Dome in Brighton. On the 29th and 30th of December, we have Snow Queen. And, of course, at the Brighton Centre, from the 5th of January to the 14th of January, is the ever-popular Holiday on Ice. And, again, tickets for all those events from their local website details, which you can find online by just putting the name of the theatre in. Or if you look at the Visit Brighton website, quite a lot of these events are there. In general terms, one of the other events is the Pavilion Ice Rink. You don't have to be a skater. You don't have to whiz round on your skates. But you can watch all the young people that do and have a very nice meal there as well. That's on from the... well, it's on now until the 14th of January. So that's the Pavilion Ice Rink, which, needless to say, is at the Brighton Pavilion and running until the 14th of January. Another event is Christmas Carol. Now, this is at a venue called the Spire in Eastern Road in Brighton. Eastern Road, of course, is where the Royal Sussex County Hospital is. And again, it would be worth looking that up a bit more online to find out exactly where that is. That runs from the 13th to the 28th of December. Another show, which is subtitled Hip Hop Meets Fagin, is again at the Gardner Arts Centre, and that's the 14th, 15th and 16th of December. It's called Fagin's Twist, which may be not to everybody's taste, but can't say that we don't give you a choice here. Finally, going back to the Dome in Brighton, the big Christmas sing-along takes place on the 15th of December. And if you're feeling you want to spread your wings a little, there's always Snow White. I told you earlier that I was going to mention at least one more. And that's on at the Pier Pavilion in Worthing from the 1st of December until the 1st of January. And the same production, but a different cast, obviously, it takes place at the Horse in Crawley, and that's from the 8th of December to the 7th of January. Now, if you want a bit more professional entertainment in a large theatre, there are two shows in London that I can personally recommend, having been to see them both several times. A matinee performances on both, so you can go up on the train comfortably or even on the coach and go to the matinee and be home in time for supper later in the evening. Or if you want to make a day of it, you can spread your wings and perhaps even treat yourself to supper at the Savoy or one of the major London hotels. The shows in question are 42nd Street, which, for any of you who can remember that as a film, great fun, huge dancing. It's a very large cast and a very large orchestra. That is at the Theatre Royal Drury Lane, yes, the famous Theatre Royal Drury Lane in London, and well worth a see, particularly if you like the old tap. Can't beat it myself, can't do it either, but that's neither here nor there. And finally, I think my favourite show that I have seen for many a year, and which is finishing early in January, it's called An American in Paris. It's on the Dominion Theatre in Tottenham Court Road, which is down the far end from Marble Arch in London. I went to see that a couple of Saturdays afternoon in the matinee, and it was full of people. And I have to say that the majority of us had grey hair. So you won't be outnumbered by lots of kids looking at their phones and things. So An American in Paris, the Dominion Theatre, Tottenham Court Road, is highly recommended. Happy Christmas.
Now, Chris also features in our next item, which is rather more serious. He heard recently about a local lady called Daz Sanders, who set up a fund in memory of her teenage son, who died back in 2012. To find details, Chris invited Daz to come into our studio, and he began by asking her to tell him about her son.
Connor Charles Edward Saunders was born March 25th, 1993, and he died on the 14th of April 2012 by a senseless act of violence, which was one punch.
Just simple as that, one punch?
As simple as that, one punch.
Now, in his memory, you've got a rather special thing that you're doing.
Yeah, we have. On the night that it happened, Connor, truly, from the moment he was born, was just completed our family. He was just full of joy. At the hospital that night, when we found out that Connor was brain dead, we decided as a family that something good had to come from something so bad. And about 6 weeks before Connor was killed, we were watching a football game at home, and a very famous footballer called Fabrice Muamba suffered sudden cardiac arrest on pitch, and his life was saved by a defibrillator. And Connor, being just 19, loved his football, had a passion for football that I may never see again. Couldn't quite understand how somebody so fit and healthy could suffer a heart attack. And he wanted a defibrillator at his football club. He played for Peacehaven and Towscombe at the time. And about a week after, there was a defibrillator fund sweet jar on the bar in the clubhouse, and there were just pennies in it. And Connor wanted this defibrillator, and he would come home and say, "Mum, how are we going to get it? It's going to cost a lot of money." And then Connor was killed. And at his celebration of life, obviously, we didn't want flowers. He had brought his girlfriend flowers, but he wasn't a flower person. So people wanted to give us money, and we didn't know what to do with this money because nature hadn't taken Connor's life. It was violence. And it was my husband that said, "Why don't we purchase his football club a defibrillator?" And we were like, "Wow, yes, let's do that." But we had enough money to purchase his youth side, where he played his football at Whitehawk, a defibrillator. And today, which was last Wednesday, we presented our 73rd defibrillator in schools and football clubs at grassroots level, across Sussex.
Amazing. And all of that has come out of one tragedy and will stop a tragedy hopefully happening to somebody else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Defibrillators, we looked into it after losing Connor. We looked into the fact that it's the highest, biggest killer in the UK. And about 170,000 heart attacks happen every year. And 90,000 of them will be outside of a hospital. Defibrillators should be everywhere. The more we do research on it, the more we found that 12 young people die every week from sudden cardiac arrest, and a lot of those young people are in schools. As a mum, I know what it's like to live without your child, and the grief is exhausting. And if it can save the life of a child, then they should be in every school.
Couldn't agree with that more. And of course, old people are equally affected by heart problems, aren't they?
Absolutely, so. Absolutely. With sudden cardiac arrest, it's not detected. So even if you had a heart problem and you go to the hospital and you can come away from there thinking you've got a healthy heart, and then you can have a heart attack, and the only thing that can save your life is a defibrillator. It speaks to you. It tells you exactly what you do. We at the foundation, we do provide training for up to 8 members of staff, but you don't need to be trained. We give that training purely because we want them to be confident and familiar with the defibrillator that we present. But you don't need training. It does actually talk to you.
Now, I'm sure everybody will have seen defibrillators and railway stations and around the place. A lot of people, I suspect, might think, oh, that's got to be used by a trained person. It's not something the general public can do. Is that a correct assumption?
No, it's not. Anyone can do it. Even a child can do it. It tells you exactly what to do. It talks to you. And it won't work if you haven't had a heart attack. It won't work. It won't give you the shock unless your heart has stopped. So it can't do any damage to anybody.
It can't. You can't misuse it, in other words.
No, can't misuse it.
So why aren't there more of them?
Funding. You know, our package costs £1,200.
Per unit.
And that's because we give the training. We also, when we go into schools, we give a first aid workshop for Key Stage 2. First aid is so important. It should be on the curriculum. It can save a life. You can save lives with your hands. And I think it is purely down to funding.
And we talked about first aid and the use of defibrillators. Is it something that people generally can do? I mean, if somebody, they see somebody on the ground or somebody collapse on the ground, what is the procedure to do, whether there's a defibrillator or not?
Well, it's CPR and the recovery position. I mean, if your heart hasn't stopped, you can put somebody in the recovery position easy. I mean, it's such an easy task. You know, we have Key Stage 2, so you're talking 8 to 11-year-olds. My 5-year-old grandson at the time was shown how to do CPR, the counts and the breaths, and he was just 5. He's now 7. He can put somebody in the recovery position to help save a life. We were told very early on when we were looking at the package that we wanted to put into schools that 96 people lost their lives at Hillsborough. If 73 of them had been put in the recovery position, they'd still be here today.
Really?
Yeah. Scary.
It is. I mean, it's totally worrying. And, of course, a lot of the people listening to this programme are elderly, and they have no concept, of, by and large, of how to help somebody else. Mm. So if they see one of their friends or colleagues collapse or laying on the floor, what are the basic things they should do?
The basic things is to get them on the side so that they don't choke on their tongue. And if they're sick, that the sick actually goes on the floor and them not swallow it. But it is really just to get them on their side. Call for help. Absolutely call for help. No 999 or 112.
Don't panic.
Don't panic. No, please don't panic. No. And you know, we all panic in certain situations when that happens. But it is definitely to call for help and get them on their sides.
And where does the defrib fit into that?
To the defib, well, if it is heart failure, if the heart has stopped, you can get a defib.
And how would you know if the heart has stopped on somebody?
Well, because if you look down to their feet when they're lying on the floor and their chest isn't rising or you can't hear their breath, then you know that the heart has stopped.
So the fact they're not breathing means that their heart has stopped.
Yeah.
Right, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, as simple as that.
Because a lot of people will say that, oh, well, they're breathing, but that doesn't necessarily mean that...
If they're breathing, get them onto their side and call for help. If they're not breathing, then it is a heart attack. And the only thing that will save their life is a defibrillator.
And somebody's noticed that there's one round the corner on the wall or something like that. What do they do?
There are 2 buttons on a defibrillator. One is the on-off button. And you push that on. It tells you exactly what to do. And then there's the shock button, which produces the shock. And the shock actually stops the heart just for that moment. to then restart it.
And it's quite safe to be used by anybody untrained, anybody on the street, as it were.
Absolutely.
And the you said these cost a lot of money, £1,200. Yeah. How do you raise this money?
We have events throughout the year, but about 3 years ago, we was at a networking evening and we met with Rocking Horse Charity, which helped six children across Sussex. They were so passionate about the work that, that we do, that good has to come from bad, that the fact that we want to help others, even in amongst our grief, that they now sponsor us. They're partners with us, and they fund the defibs that we put into schools.
Right, so so they raise money, but you raise money yourselves, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. We had our annual coffee morning on Sunday, and we raised £1,413.14. We'll have our quiz night, our Christmas quiz night. That's a great fundraiser, and it's a lovely evening. We have half marathons, full marathons, people bungee jump for Connor. There isn't much that anyone that knew him, that know of him, wouldn't do for him. So,
I'm sure. And how do people find out about this? They're listening to this and think, I'd like to find out more. How can I help?
Okay, so you go on to connors5.com, and the reason the number 5 is there is because Connor was an organ donor and he signed the register at just 16. It was a selfless decision he made, and on the night we were in hospital with Connor and found out that he was brain dead, we also found out that he was an organ donor. My husband initially said no, that the doctors weren't to touch him, but we sat as a family, and Connor was a very bright young man and he would have helped anyone in life, so I wasn't surprised that he would help anyone in death. So we honoured Connor's wishes. And he went on to save 5 lives. So it's connors5.com. On Facebook, we're the Connor Saunders Foundation. And on Twitter, we're Connor Saunders 5. We're on Instagram, which is connors5HQ. And you can see and follow us on those sites.
So there's the question of the memory of Connor. How long can you see this going on?
Oh, forever. I want, well, as long as I breathe, as long as my daughter breathes. My daughter runs the foundation. She does everything and then pretty much tells me what to do and where we're going. And
they do.
Yeah, absolutely. And all the while she breathes, you know, she does it for her brother. I do it for my son. My husband does it for his son. Connor had another brother called Callum, and he does it for his brother. Yeah, you know, Connor had a girlfriend who's heavily involved still in the foundation, and I have a son-in-law who's a firefighter who is heavily involved in the foundation, and friends. I think, you know, Connor was the kind one, the gentle one, the loving one, and wherever he was, you wanted to be. And yeah, his legacy has to live on. His life will never be in vain.
Chris English was talking to Daz Saunders about the Connor Saunders Foundation, which she set up in memory of her late son. You can find out more about them from their website, which is at connors5.com. They're also on Facebook as the Connor Saunders Foundation, on Twitter as Connor Saunders 5, and on Instagram as Connors5HQ. And that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time. But in the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with me to let me know what you think of the programme, or perhaps to suggest items you might like me to cover in future editions, I'd love to hear from you. There are two ways of getting in touch. You can either contact me by email at the following address, info@greymattersproductions.org.uk. That's info, spelled I-N-F-O, at greymattersproductions, which is typed all as one word, .org.uk. Or you can contact me via the Radio Reverb website. If you go to the website and find the page that's devoted to At Home This Morning, you can send me an email from there. And whichever method you choose, I'd love to hear from you. Well, it now only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme for Radio Reverb, to thank everyone who's taken part in the programme. Once again, to thank you for listening, and until we meet again, to wish you all the very best. Goodbye.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production for Radio Reverb.